Welcome back to the TV Talk Machine podcast, episode 49. I am your co-host, Jason Snell, and across the internet from me, chief TV critic at The Hollywood Reporter, your host, Mr. Tim Goodman. Hello.
Woohoo!
We're back.
Woohoo!
Woo!
Episode 49, 49ers. If you're a 49ers fan, this is big.
It's a bad time for you. It's a bad time.
A good episode, but maybe a bad time. Yeah. I don't know.
Who got arrested this week?
Oh, yeah, I know. You know what, though? Through it all, I remain positive. I'm just throwing that out there.
Okay, good.
All right, I'm a fan.
Good. Okay. Good for you.
Yeah. I'm podcast 49.
49.
Yeah.
I know, 50. Big number 50 next week.
I like how we made up.
I won't be here.
You won't be here.
I won't be here for big number 50. David Lohr and you and David Lohr can ring in big number 50 together, and I'll be in Portland.
Yeah, it's awesome.
That's just to celebrate, because I really am a sentimental person. There's so much to talk about.
As always.
So much is happening.
Mm-hmm.
Where should we start?
I'm going to leave it to you, because your mind is like a German engineering. It just clicks, click, click, click. Like, yeah.
Well, then, since we've got the German engineering, I will ask you about Herr Roboto. Mr. Robot, finale aired this week. You wrote a nice piece about Mr. Robot and how it went from being this kind of random show on USA to being the show of the summer, and why it was the show of the summer.
I did. And that why is Rami Malek.
Yeah.
So it's Malek. So it's, it's funny because there's so much to talk about that show. And I remember when I watched the pilot having that, and I didn't review it. You know, I was not the person who reviewed it for back then. And I remember watching the pilot like a week after I think the review came out, and I thought, oh my God, this totally does not work unless he's there. I mean, unless he's so great, because so much of this shouldn't work. And then the second week, I was like, oh, this is a little bit more interesting. And it still should not work for all these other reasons. And then he was just, you know, Rami Malek was so amazing. And then, you know, and now, of course, I loved the whole season. I like the fact that, there's been so much good stuff written on it, and in some ways, the Mr. Robot, Rob must have said Mr.
Yeah,
Roboto.
Yeah, Roboto.
You see what you did? Uh-huh. In some ways, it's just a perfect show to, just like Mad Men was, to kind of highlight how much good television criticism's out there. A lot of people have written really, really strong pieces about this series, a friend of mine, Matt Zollersatz, just did something that was like so good. And there's a lot to write about. Clearly, there's a lot of visual stuff. I mean, they're really shaking things up visually. And I think what Matt wrote is, I actually said that in my appreciation of Rami as well, in that the show's not great yet. You know, it's very good. It can be better. But the winning formula for the show, other than you got an incredible actor to pull off an incredibly difficult role where everything could have been really gone sideways if you had the wrong guy in there, is that the win here is that, as we're talking about too much TV, hashtag peak TV, hashtag haven't peaked yet, here's a show that kind of catches everybody's fancy in a way where they're like, yeah, it's not perfect, but it's pretty awesome, and I'm excited to watch it. Yeah. And I was like, man, that is great, because like in this times of confusion, if you can stick out like that and then and catch everybody's attention and be stunning and get people talking about television and how it's actually made as far as the form with camera and the acting styles and the writing, you did something great. So it's a really a fun summer story.
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree with you. I don't think it's necessarily great, but I do think it had moments of greatness. And although, as much as I love Orphan Black and and how much I love the first season of Orphan Black especially, I feel like I look at Mr. Robot and I think this seems to have higher aspirations and shows me that at moments that it could get there, even though there were some, you know, there's some slack time. But like the fact that it's got this great performance and it's got the great visuals and it doesn't screw up the technology, I literally just watched this to see if it would be not a thing like CSI Cyber. And instead it turns out actually the tech's pretty good and it's a good show with moments of greatness. Yeah. It's not perfect, but to break through that wall of like, you know, just the times of confusion, just, you know, to get people to watch a show in the summertime and talk about it, is a huge accomplishment unto itself. And I'm really looking forward to what comes next. I thought, in contrast, we talked about Humans last time. Mm-hmm. In contrast to Humans, where I felt the last episode kind of pulled the punches because mm-hmm. I felt like they were like, well, we're not going to go too far here because we're going to tell more stories later. I felt like Mr. Robot kind of didn't care. It almost, the last episode almost felt like we skipped over the season finale and were accidentally shown the first episode of the following season, which I love that. I love that I don't know where we are, that it skips forward in time. Mm-hmm. It's paying off the big thing that it's been talking about the whole season. I thought that was really great and quite different in its approach, like the opposite to how I felt the Humans finale went.
Yeah, and there was some chatter this week too, think pieces about whether it's a good idea or not to have so many series creator postmortems after their season.
Oh man,
and I think that's interesting too because I don't read a lot of those. I as a critic, I happen to believe that what's on the screen is on the screen, and anything other than that, you're letting them spin it. In some ways. They're spinning it. But I will say also that I have found really interesting explanations and or lack of explanations. For example, having – which I thought – you know, we've talked last week about this where I thought Homeland was a comeback season, not enough to get an Emmy nomination, which it did, but a comeback season.
You made that guy, you just made that letter writer so angry by saying that again. Anyway.
I just threw that back in there. But yeah, and then to have them come out and talk about the letdown of the season finale, you know, and I was like, yeah, I want to hear what he has to say about this. Like, how do you basically thwart all your forward momentum by having this introspective, non-spectacular ending to the Homeland thing? And I didn't think his reasons for it were good. And you know, there at other times, like when you know, currently probably the best show on television, The Americans, when they had a very, very lackluster and I thought disappointing season finale, I wanted to hear what our THR reporters got out of the creators about why they left people out, and so that was interesting. But I don't like sort of spinning and hearing creators say, "Oh, we were trying to do this and we were hoping to do that," and I was like, "Okay, yeah, but none of that was on the screen, so you failed, and you're kind of filling in the gaps now. You're coloring in between the lines in our imagination, like, oh yeah, that's what he was going for. I get it now. I think that's kind of a cheat." But that said, I also thought it was kind of interesting to listen to Sam Esmail, the creator of Mr. Robot, to talk about things that he was surprised people were surprised
at. Yeah.
That was really good. I mean, Alan Sepinwall did a very good interview with him. And I also like the fact that he said in that interview, he said, we were always going to show season one the crash. We're gonna show you the fallout of what happened, where everybody said, oh no, that's like two or three seasons away or whatever. And he's like, oh no. That's now. There will be a payoff. And we'll show it. And then, and also just, there's, you know, I won't give them away, but there were a number of quote unquote surprising reveals. And he was like, yeah, I kind of thought it was funny when people said, oh, it's so obvious what's happening here. And he's like, well, I kind of meant it to be obvious.
Yeah,
I didn't want it to be a secret.
I wasn't trying to get away with something here.
Right. You're supposed to see this. And then he said, which was, I thought, clever, because people were so enamored with having quote figured out this reference or what was actually happening, they took their eye off another little twist mm-hmm. that happened at the same time. And so that little bit of explanation was fine with me. But I also like him saying, yeah, we were always going to shoot it like this. We had to retrain everybody from not just from the directors but down to the camera people about how to frame people in scenes, which you just don't do this on television. I thought that was really interesting. So I don't know. Maybe I am actually revisiting my position on whether there should be postmortems or not. But Mr. Robot, excellent, excellent run.
There's a nice, I'll put the Alan Sepinwall interview and Vox.com link that showed the kind of rule of thirds in cinematography and photography, where, mm-hmm. you know, you want things in particular spaces, and how on that show, as you mentioned, they instructed the crew to shoot it in this way, where a lot of times the characters are pushed to the very edges of the screen, which honestly you couldn't do in old time TV, because first off it was 4x3, and second, those old TVs, you had to shoot with all the safe mode. So basically everything had to be in the center because you couldn't count on it. And now with flat screen 16x9 TVs, you can actually get away with this trick of saying, you know, Mr. Robot's going to be down in the bottom right hand corner of the screen,
right.
And he's going to be alienated because of that. And the Vox piece that I'll link to has a lot of screenshots that show just how kind of, you know, how they set this style for the show, which is, you know, I want to give Sam Esmail credit for that too, because I mean, he obviously is setting the agenda for his show, and I don't mind that he did all those interviews. I didn't feel like he was giving away everything that he's doing, and I think for a show that's on the USA Network and still only got watched by like whatever 1.4 million people,
yeah, 1.2, yeah,
mm-hmm. yeah, a small number relatively speaking. You know, every chance he gets to get interviewed by an outlet right now to get the momentum going, because I think the hope here, right, is that the buzz on the show continues, and so when they come back for a second season, it builds.
Yes.
And so, you know, I don't fault him, and I liked how he kind of, like, he was breaking down how they did some of the stuff they did in the first season without going into a lot of detail. There wasn't a lot of, oh, we don't know, and there wasn't a lot of, let me tell you how it's going to go.
He
was just more like, I'm going to hit the high points and why we did it this way, and I felt satisfied reading that as a little capper to the season without feeling like he was trying to make excuses or give things away.
Yes, well said. I mean, that's exactly what I thought as well. And you're, to your point about he needs to do this, absolutely. He needs to do this, and you know, we can get all snickety-snicky, you know, does he have to do a billion of these? The dude's trying to keep his show on the air,
yeah.
And if we're going to talk about too much TV, this is one of the fallouts. But
if everybody wants to interview you about your season finale, you say yes. I think if you're a first season cable show that might have a chance to kind of capture the zeitgeist, I think you got to say yes.
I think you absolutely have to say yes. And you know, back to what we were talking about, these times of confusion, Endgame nonsense. I do think that what will happen for Mr. Robot, because you know, you get lulled into the sense that everybody's watching it, but 1.2 million is basically nothing. And so I think what will happen, and this is a byproduct of having too much television, is that now a full season's in the bank. Everybody's heard about it. Over the summer or the rest of the summer or going into the fall, people will discover it. So the next time the second season rolls around, a whole, like, triple the audience could end up showing up. Because I think when there's something that's that much ink and people say, yeah, this is really good, you should watch it, people will eventually find it. It's slow, but they'll find it.
I feel like if I'm USA, I would fully support getting this on streaming services as quickly. I think this is actually a problem that they had with Orphan Black, is that when Orphan Black's
yes.
first season went away, it was buzzworthy and it was nowhere. You could not find it on any of the streaming services, and it wasn't airing on BBC America and reruns, so it was just gone. And that's the one thing that I would say if I was USA is, you might not be able to get more replays of the show on your network. You could maybe string it out, do a marathon, something like that, but just get in front of people, because if you can get them in front of people, then next summer when it comes back, you'll have a bigger audience. And I think that's the game you got to play in the times of confusion, is just
absolutely.
To get in front of people, let them binge it, and then they'll be hooked.
Absolutely.
All right, so Mr. Robot, Hal Roboto, is done. Hey, one thing, this is a crossover between what I write about and what you write about, which is there's a story about Apple pondering being a content producer, that they offered a Bill, they made an offer to Bill Simmons at one point,
mm-hmm.
What was the other one that they did? Top Gear, that they talked to the Top Gear guys about, mm-hmm. before Amazon ended up picking that up. And there was a general report that Apple was considering, at least, talking about doing an entertainment service that kind of read to be like a Netflix kind of thing, except you know, Apple Originals, basically. And that struck me as being kind of a wacky story. What do you think about it?
I think my first reaction was this, no. Yeah, I could prolong that for the soccer uh-huh. guy and then also the Scream painting. That was me, absolutely. I thought, oh my god, no. And then the second one was like, oh, Apple, dude, I go to you for cutting edge. I go to you for stuff that I really want. And I think you might have saw it. I tweeted out. I like basically trying to get into the television content game right now is like introducing right now in 2015 the iPod Classic. I mean, you're so late to the game. Yeah. At this point, you're not revolutionizing like you were when you put the iPod and the iTunes out. But now you're just late to the game. So I don't know what's in it for them, but maybe big picture wise, they're just thinking, why not? Why not us?
Well, they got a lot of money. Mm-hmm. I carry some baggage here. Like, I having watched Apple for a long time, you know, the Apple of 10, 15 years ago was not the Apple of today. But I remember at one point Apple kind of had this, they were full of themselves enough to be like, we're going to write this, we're going to launch this website and we're going to review other websites. And it's going to be this editorial product where we highlight things. And it was terrible. And they killed it after a very short amount of time. Like their history doing what we'd call kind of like, you know, things beyond curation to be like editorial content and stuff like that. Their history has not been great. Do they really want, what's their brand stand for? Do they want to get into, you know, even something like Daredevil, right? Which has got blood and stuff or other more adult content, or do they want their brand? Like this is an Apple original and it's associated with them. Does that, or do they want to kind of stay above it? The advantage of being above it and being like, well, we're just running the App Store and we do some approvals, but it's really other people's apps or we're just running iTunes and, you know, the movies and the music that go in here are not by us. We're just sort of reflecting the culture. And they do some like highlights and stuff, but it's not their stuff, right? That they have shown they're good at. They did that with Beats. The Beats One radio station that they've got, still, you know, the DJs are picking what music to play. They're not like producing the music. It's a level removed. It's not their stuff. They're playing other people's stuff. So so that's the thing that I have a hard time getting over that and thinking, is Apple really going to make Apple content, Apple TV shows, Apple movies? Is that really a path that we want to go down? Microsoft tried this and they gave up. Mm-hmm. They hired Bonnie Hammer? Who they hired at Microsoft? I forget who it was.
It was
from CBS. It was Tellum?
Nancy Tellum.
Nancy Tellum, right. That's who it was. Nancy Tellum.
I almost said Nina Tassler.
and it was a disaster, and they shut it down. Or I look at, like, Sony's got, you know, their PlayStation originals and stuff like that, and it's just like, is that really... these are on the periphery of all of this. It seems like it's not something they want to do. It adds a lot of complication. I know they got a lot of money. They could probably hire somebody and set it up. But I did have an argument with a guy on Twitter, and I don't want to misrepresent his argument. His argument was basically like running a TV network is like being a DJ on Beats One. And I said, nope, it's not. No, I said, if you think that Ted Sarandos' job at Netflix is like Zane Lowe's job at Beats One, I think you understand, like, being involved in choosing what gets made from the infinite possibilities that are offered you by Hollywood is a very different thing. And then you have to make some tough choices about what you want to pay your money for, what kind of content is going to, you know, who are you going to work with? How's it going to be generated? It seems like, you know, it's a totally different game that Apple could play, but I'm with you. My initial reaction was like, no, don't do it.
Well, I think that's actually a very interesting your spin on that about what about the brand and what it does. And I think that part of that is I think that there's some there's definitely like a sexy time quality to the idea of being in the original content business. There's no doubt about it. I mean, that kind of lured Amazon into it.
Sure.
And you know, even to some extent, Hulu, which it would be, it's certainly, you know, in their DNA, and you would think it's more natural for them, but yet they were just a service, and for them to go out and do originals, was, it took them a couple of years to really, other than just acquiring, but now doing other things, took them a while. And it does take time to ramp up. You know, Amazon and even Netflix, they've only been in front of us for a very short time. And by that, I mean in front of critics and showing their stuff at TCA. And it kind of tells you how the level of preparedness and how deep their production elements are. And they're kind of, and they're still a little bit outsiders to the industry. I can see the allure of Apple doing that. I really do think it's interesting that your take on it. I think that's really true, because at some point it does muddy up the brand a little bit, and you get in some really dicey, provocative situations. Even though you got into it for sexy time, then you end up like, oh, people are mad at us because we made something that now
it has bad words in it, or there's sex in it, or there's violence in it.
Right.
It's like,
or who
dare you?
Who did we hire again now? Who allowed this violence against women story to play out as an Apple original, and now we're totally backpedaling? You know, I can just see, you know, I can just see the Apple exec saying, "I don't remember it thinking it was going to be like this."
Plus, you know, they're trying to make deals, right? They're trying to make deals with all these entertainment providers to be on their platforms, and right. You know, Amazon does play that game too, and Microsoft plays that game. But I wonder, you know, if that muddies the waters further too. But you know,
and also, you know, you talk about there being money, and they do, and they seem to be printing money. Obviously,
they've got billions, hundreds of billions of dollars in cash that they could use to fund a studio.
So they could do it, and they could lose money. So that kind of is it's a moot point for this that I'm bringing up, but I'll say it anyway. There's not a lot of money to be made in this scenario until you win, and until you win big. And mostly you're putting out a lot of money to make products, and then no one sees it because no one, it's too much, you know, times of confusion, too much TV, TMT. And I think that they could sustain it because they have so much money, but what's the win for them? I mean, you know, I think Amazon is finding out, like, oh, you know, everybody comes to Amazon every day and they buy stuff and they ship it. And why wouldn't they click on the TV? It's so much easier than actually going through. And they're finding out, yeah, people who even actually pay for Amazon Prime still don't know that they get TV shows on there, which is hilarious. So harder than it looks.
I wanted to mention, since we mentioned Hulu, that another sort of news story that happened this week is Hulu relented for $4 a month more than they're usually charging. They will turn off the ads that run, which for TV is a big deal. There's a lot of, other than the ABC stuff, because ABC obviously has a deal where they're like, nope, we want advertising. Give us advertising. But all the other material that they've got will run ad-free now if you are on their higher tier. Now, you know, it's $4 more than – it's $12 a month, and, you know, Netflix is $8 a month. So you're paying more to get the ad-free view. But it is there, and Hulu has a lot of exclusives. Like, I was watching The Thick of It on Hulu.
Uh-huh.
There are a lot of British shows on Hulu, and they got a lot of exclusive material. They picked up a lot of exclusive movies that used to be on Netflix, but they took that over, I think, you know, in the last couple of days. So, you know, I think it's a smart move on their part, just in the sense that all their competition had no ads, and by not even offering an ad-free version, they looked dumb. And now you have to pay more for it, but you can get it if you want it.
Well, that's kind of what I joked yesterday Tuesday when the news broke. Wednesday when the news broke on it. It was like they did look dumb, and now in some ways it looks like genius, because it's like, okay, and I tweeted this out already, so I'm being redundant here. I think that their service is worth about $7.99 to have no ads on it, just like Netflix. So to have us jump in early years ago and pay for this $7.99 for content that actually had ads in it. We were the dumbasses back then.
Mm-hmm.
Check the box. We were dumbasses back then, because now they're like, oh, yeah, you were already paying for commercials, and now also obviously you'll pay $4 more. And I'm like, oh, look at you. You're right. I will pay $4 more to not watch your stupid commercials. But if I was Netflix, I'd be like, wait, what?
Yeah.
$12.99? Sure, we're going to raise our prices. So who knows what's going to fall out, but –
yeah, who knows?
They were late to the game, and now they're reaping the rewards of it.
It wouldn't shock me if in the end the prices ended up being pretty similar. Wouldn't shock me if Hulu, you know, started dropping its prices a little bit over time, even to compete, or holding them steady if Netflix prices go up. But, you know, Netflix and Amazon Prime are both roughly penciled out to $8-$8.50 per month.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and then there's Hulu at 12. So
yeah,
you make your choices.
Whew.
Yeah.
All right.
Blue whales on television live. It doesn't sound that exciting, but it actually was kind of cool on PBS and the BBC, right? Big blue whales.
Yes. And I'm going to do a little shout out here to Chuck Barney at the Contra Costa Times, who took my old job there when I moved over to the Examiner and Chronicle. Chuck lost his mind watching these shows live. There was other stuff that was on that I had to watch. So I was going back and trying to catch bits of it live, and then catching basically stuff that happened live and then was put on the internet. But it was thrilling. It was pretty amazing. I mean, to for them to actually have the technology to track and And the technology kind of let them down because it said there actually are no blue whales in the Monterey area. They didn't come down. You're not going to see them live on this gambit you took, this gamble. And then to have the blue whale pop up and then another one came on the last day. I mean, it just fit in there. They took a real gamble going live and it came in there and they lost their minds. They were crazy. And Chuck, watching it, who I follow, lost his mind. It was very funny. There was a lot of amazing, amazing nature shots. And my favorite, I actually tweeted it out too. I did not see it live. And I was like, holy hell. It was during the Mr. Robot finale. And that is a gigantic whale. I think it was a killer whale. Maybe it was bigger. I'm not sure. Like flies out of – it looks like it's fake. It looks like it's something from Sharknado. It's like the whale shoots out of the water and like flings a dolphin like it's a chew toy. And it's just a trip. I'll send you the link of that. But it's kind of amazing. It's like, oh, look at that dolphin coming out of the water, going up 3 or 4 or 5 stories and being thrown several, 100 yards away. It was kind of like wild. Like, oh, nature's dangerous.
Yeah. But the idea of saying, we're going to just be here live with nature.
Yeah.
What a crazy idea.
Yeah. And we interviewed them in LA at the TCA. And that was the first question. Like, what if nobody shows up? And they're like, well, they're probably going to show up, but will the really super exciting things show up? No, we don't know.
There will be otters. We know the otters will be there. Otters. We've got some otters in a cave somewhere.
Yeah. Well, otters for the win pretty much any time. Otters for water animals are the cats of the internet, right? I mean, they're just going to – they're going to nail it.
That's true. They're solid. They're solid performers, the otters.
Yes, otters, cats of the internet, whatever. I have no idea what I just said.
No, it sounded good though.
All right.
Hey, you just reminded me before we went on of something that I had completely lost track of. It was so far away. It's been so long since Stephen Colbert was announced as the host of The Late Show. It's been so long since David Letterman retired. Next week, Colbert premieres.
He does indeed. Tuesday the 8th. Mark your calendars. Everybody,
why not Monday?
Labor Day.
Oh, it's Labor Day. So okay, good one. You
breaking a lot of news.
The knowledge, man. The knowledge. It's oozing out. The knowledge. I'm just amazed. Amazed. So that's it. Wow, the 8th.
Yes. Yeah. So he's gonna start. He's got a big week planned, and it's good to have him on. Obviously generated a lot of stories when he showed up at TCA, which he had to, and. I think it was interesting for people. It wasn't that interesting for me. I've interviewed him before, but he also he's himself many times before. I don't find that revolutionary. But a lot of people were like, oh, my God, it's Stephen Colbert as Stephen Colbert, not as this fictional right-wing blowhard. And I'm glad that story kind of came out and people got over that. But I think the Gen Pop will definitely be finding out on Tuesday that he's just a normal dude who kind of looks and sounds and acts like he did when he was on the Colbert Report. But I think he's going to do great, honestly. I'm checking a little box there, and I will go on my TV, and I will watch him every night.
Yeah, and I imagine that you'll be called into service to give a quick reaction to the first show, not a review piece for
typical
THR.
Not a review, not a thing. I will be there, hashtag not a review. I will be there on the 8th. And I'll hopefully get the East Coast feed, and I will have a review up.
Do they have you just like Hollywood Reporter as a TV critic having the East Coast feed for live events and for stuff that's happening is really important. Do they like work with your? Do you get set up with something so that you can watch East Coast timed stuff? You know, instead of waiting for it to re-air in the Pacific.
Well, surprisingly, DirecTV has a lot of East Coast feeds in it. And you know, there for a long time, people who were getting the East Coast feeds had it dropped once they found out you were on the West Coast. But that's not really true for all of, because they do both feeds a lot on the satellite service.
Huh.
However, we have THR. We have like three or four sling boxes in our New York office.
Ah, I see.
Yeah, so good. I can go on and I sling box it there.
Nice.
And I'm always like, hey. I don't know who you are. I don't know what your name is, but I need you to get off. You're watching something in New York, and I'm going to turn the channel from LA or San Francisco because we got to watch this.
It's interesting. I always wondered if like there was a special like secret TV critic code that unlocked all of DirecTV, where DirecTV is like, oh, yes, why, yes, Mr. Goodman, yes, have all the channels, please.
Wouldn't that be good?
Wouldn't it be nice? But no, Slingbox is in the
Slingbox.
Yeah, it works. It works.
Which, okay. I'm sure the Slingbox people are pretty happy. That's what, sure. A free ad right there for them.
Sure, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Brought to you by, no.
No, not yet. But they, it could be. They could get in touch with us.
They could.
Oh, by the way, let me just circle back very quickly and think, you know what? If Apple does not, I don't think they should get into the content business, but here's what I think they definitely should do. They should definitely have a show where I'm the host and I talk about television. Absolutely.
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, absolutely. And I, you and I could do it together.
There was a nice thread on Twitter about we need the Siskel and Ebert of TV, you know, of TV, where it's like talking about breaking down TV shows, yeah, on the TV.
The problem with that, in my mind, has always been, what channel do you appear on? Because as soon as you appear on that channel, it basically wipes out your ability to critique them.
I think you appear on the internet. I think that's how it has to be. Or you could take it without, you know, or there could be podcasts. There's, you know, there's some fine.
This is basically the version of that without moving images.
So call us. That's what we're saying. Call us, whoever absolutely. You are. Internet television. Anything more, or do you want to go to the listener letters?
Let's do that. Yeah.
All right. Listener My Vogue on Poetry, our old pal, on Twitter, hashtag times of confusion, actually, says, I've got some precious binge time this weekend. What show do I need to catch up on before it starts again in the fall, or do I settle in and watch Fortitude?
Well, my current thing is, I'm saying, if you've watched Humans and if you've watched Robot, Mr. Robot, you have to do those right away. If not, fine. If you didn't watch Fargo last year, definitely binge that. Get that done. I think you should be catching up with Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll on FX because it's great. And even though I give it a really good review, and so did a lot of others, some not. People are really coming around to it now, so I think they should be watching that. If you didn't binge watch You're the Worst on FX, I might try that, since that was a show I started off not liking, and now I'm back to it, and it's coming back on the 8th along with Colbert. But yeah, I would say Fortitude for sure. That's one of mine. I would do that. And as far as network shows, I don't know. I kind of like returning network shows. I think that the one that I would say, if you didn't watch two, I would say, and this is weird to for you and I because we've talked about this, you know, ad infinitum, but I would say the two network shows, if you didn't watch them last year, the ones you should binge now are Jane the Virgin and Fresh Off the Boat. Those are my picks.
Oh, very nice. Mm-hmm. Those are good. I'm going to throw in The Flash. Flash is fun. You can get caught up with The Flash.
Good pick. Yes.
See, I love that. It's like we're doing the Giants post-game wrap now. Good pick. Nice pick.
Yeah, good pick.
That's an inside reference for Bay Area people, but good pick. Nice pick. George D.,
oh, yeah.
From the OG from the 415 says, for the love of God, Tim, take 40 minutes and watch 7 Days in Hell. It is pure joy, and Michael Sheen is phenomenal.
Wow. Okay.
It's not a question.
It's not. It's a demand, actually. He's very bossy.
He is.
Very, very bossy.
But anyway, that's the humorous film on the HBO. So.
Okay.
George D. endorses it.
All right.
Chris Murray on Twitter. He's probably given us his area code in the past, but didn't give it this time because he's on Twitter, says, just referring to last week's episode, in my book, the bonus content clears the balance due for missed episodes. So thank you, Chris.
Thank you, Chris. I like that. Clears the balance due. We're all good. The slate is clean.
We got no more red, no more red in our ledgers.
No, not at all.
Marlene, I believe in the 510, tweeted to us and said, why don't we do a meetup in the 510? The new parkway is terrific. 10 to 12 minutes from the 19th Street BART station. Great beers on tap. Snacks to who wants to call them? So, okay.
I love Marlene. She knows us very well. She's like, it's a fantastic idea. Let me tell you the actual essential part of this. Someone needs to call.
Somebody needs to call them. Here's a website. She gave us the link to the new parkway.
Oh, my God. I love her.
Maybe we will call them and see if there's
I think that's a great idea.
We're free, and could we do something? And
like a meetup would be good.
Yeah, that would be really great.
I think Marlene's secret plan here is that she knows I have a closet full of amazing swag.
Oh, yeah. Well, Chris, when he approved when he cleared our balance sheet, he did dibs some Justified swag, he said. So everybody's got that in the back of their mind. It's like,
I actually have Justified swag.
Mm.
I actually have a couple pieces of – I gave one away recently. I have a couple pieces that are kind of mind-blowing.
Wow. Well, I might need to intercept something there for my wife, who is a huge Justified fan too.
So when yes, your wife.
I'm going to have to fight Chris Murray for it. Okay, here's one from Megan in the 402.
Yes.
She says, great show this week. I'm interested in seeing she's heard this episode. No, I think she means last week. Really interested in seeing what the future of television viewing looks like. Your mention of the loss of free network TV did get me thinking about how devastating that could be for the lower income segment of our society. Most people near the poverty line can't afford subscription television, but can make the one-time investment to buy a TV to watch free network TV. If that goes away, an already marginalized part of society becomes even more separate from the mainstream. Pop culture is an almost universal language today, and while lower income people may not be able to theorize about Jon Snow or bemoan the loss of Mad Men, they can gossip about Cookie on Empire. Is there some kind of responsibility to keep a certain amount of TV free for everyone, and not just from a pop culture standpoint, but also for access to news like flood and tornado warnings, political debates, etc.? Computer technology changes so fast, a one-time investment to watch shows wouldn't be effective. My Nana can still watch TV on her 20-year-old television, but Hulu and Netflix won't even play on my 8-year-old iPad. There isn't an 8-year-old iPad, but we'll say a 5-year-old iPad, let alone a 20-year-old computer. Anyway, the show really got me thinking this week. Thanks, as always, for the great work, Megan in the 402. What do you think about that, the future of free TV?
I think that was a great letter, for starters. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there is a responsibility to have free TV. I mean, I think that first of all, there's everybody's, these are licenses from the government to have your FCC, you know, the FCC oversees it, but your government license to actually have an operating broadcasting channel is essential. And by the way, the reason why those are so important to people and they will always continue to be free TV is because they sold off the rest of their bandwidth for billions and billions of dollars to telecoms and cable giants. So you can't lose that because that now you've sold it off, but you're only given that because you actually have a TV network. So that there'll always be that, but there is a responsibility. I think she makes a really good point, though, in that we do forget. You know, and I get reminded all the time when I talk about HBO, people are like, yeah, I don't get that.
Yeah.
And people who make good salaries, you know, it's like it's even when we talk about it, a lot of people, just people who have very good jobs and maybe have families or own houses and the things that they can't spare the extra money to. It's a good reminder. And then below that, clearly, there's lots of people who trying to actually get HBO is not even a part of the question. So a lot of the pop culture discourse, which I think she said so nicely there, Megan did, you know, yeah, there is, we need to have access to,
right,
to that.
I like that.
For the news and sports and everything.
Socially marginalized because they don't have access to the things that people are talking about. I think that's true. My only take on this from a technology standpoint would be, yeah, there might be a time when over-the-air TV goes away, but I feel like there will be something, you know. My hope is that at some point there is the equivalent of universal access to internet. That's, yeah, maybe the equivalent of universal access cable, the basic cable, mm-hmm, where there'll be some level of internet that that gives you access to some level of programming, you know, probably commercially funded, you know, commercial sponsor, pre-roll ads, things like that. Mm-hmm. I can foresee a future where that's the case, where the over-the-air stuff maybe shuts down, maybe. But, you know, I would hope that there would be something to replace it, and that, you know, if because your cable, your local cable is generally regulated, just like it's not the same as broadcast, but it's the same like public service commitments and things like that that come into something that's essentially a public utility. And so, you know, their cables are running through the ground of your municipality, and there's a trade off there. So,
yes,
my hope is that there will always be something that is looking out for people who maybe can't afford to, you know, get a big cable package and fancy TV and subscribe to HBO, whatever it might be in the future.
Yes, totally agree.
All right, Hobo Eric wrote in, our buddy.
Wow.
I love that one.
I didn't see that coming, and it's never not funny. I file that under never not
funny.
Well,
the best thing is that we dubbed him Hobo Eric, and he has taken it on. He's taken the mantle on.
he's now, I bet his friends are like, hey, Hobo Eric, what are you doing Friday? Like, it's probably there. What if his parents called him Hobo Eric?
Or like, hey, Eric, or Eric's coming over. Honey, Eric's coming over for dinner tonight. Eric, which Eric? Oh, Hobo Eric.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Instead of Eric D or, yeah, Eric G.
Yeah, is it tall Eric? Yeah. Bearded Eric? Eric? No, Hobo Eric. It's Hobo Eric.
Is it
Eric.
Work Eric? No,
nope.
Not Hobo. Work Eric. Hobo Eric. So, I'm sure the response is.
So this gets better though. Hobo Eric, right now actually riding the rails between Edinburgh and London. See, hobo riding the rails. He's got his bindle.
He's got some chalk to write the hobo code.
Mm-hmm.
He downloaded also the Mad Men Hobo Code episode.
Perfect. Yep. Listening to the bonus content. Just saw Trevor Noah's stand-up at the Fringe Festival, which if you've never been to, you should absolutely. 1 year. I've been to Edinburgh and loved it and would love to go to Fringe sometime. I know you've spoken what will happen with The Daily Show under his reign, but now that I've seen his comedy live, I think he'll have a great point of view on American political ridiculousness and on racism. My fear is, so did W. Kamau Bell, and look what happened to his nightly show. Yes. P.S. If you have a meetup between Christmas and New Year's, you'll get an international visitor. I'll bring whiskey and real Cadbury's. Woo. Well, we may have to have a Hobo Eric meetup just for the chocolate.
Just for the chocolate. I can't do the whiskey. I don't drink that, but that is
so an endorsement of Trevor Noah, having seen a stand-up that he's gonna bring that point of view, but he's concerned given what happened to W. Kamau Bell's show.
As he should be. Also an endorsement of Edinburgh and the festival there, which I've never been to. It's the Fringe Festival. It's supposed to be great.
Yeah,
I think you're right that he will speak to those things. And as I wrote when I was in LA, he did it was a fine job of spin and or just, you could just say, clever PR, having him come out and do a stand-up routine before he met with the critics, and then coming out and do a very serious panel with the critics, where I'm not sure he was told don't joke about things, but he took it very seriously, which I think served him and the show very well. But my point stands. I don't think that the audience you won't be able to judge this in the first 3 months or even maybe the first six, because I think people will sample. We are all samplers, but his core audience is not linear television. So I think that's going to hurt. And as we said before, I think that the Larry, you know, the nightly show is interesting but not super compelling. So that's a future of potential woe for Comedy Central.
We're going to stay across the pond. We got John from Jolly Old England wrote in.
Yes.
To say, I would like
did
to
Did he say Jolly Old England?
He did say Jolly Old England.
Did he really?
Capital J, capital O, capital E. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I would like to know what the two of you think about the Sesame Street HBO deal with the devil. And how much longer do you think TV Guide will be published? It's your archenemy, Tim. TV Guide.
Well, I have a lot of lovely people who I know who work there, so I hope that they're published for a long time, because I have a lot of friends who work both for the website and for the magazine. Mm. And that is a confusing history, because they were not related, and now I think they're related again. It was very odd,
right? Just right, because of the way it was, the intellectual property was like sold and parceled out and put into digital versus print, and then it's just a whole.
And then
and
it could be back together again. It's very
as a kid. God, I love TV Guide. I was one of those kids. I would like pull stories out of the thing and clip things out and stuff. That's crazy. They always publish the rosters of back to football, the rosters of all the NFL teams when they would play. They'd do a little thing and I'd clip those out so I'd know who had what number and stuff.
That's football game awesome. Too. Yeah, at Press Tour, it is kind of funny. You do have a lot of people who say that they like grew up on TV Guide and bought it. I was not one of those people.
No.
But who bought every episode or every magazine. And,
oh, yeah.
And look forward to the fall
preview issue. Oh my God, yeah.
And you know what? Hey, they still do a good job of that online too. I like that as well. But I have a lot of friends. Hopefully, they'll keep publishing. And I'm sorry, what was the
preview? Sesame Street and HBO?
Well, I think the Sesame Street HBO combo goes back to Megan's question. I mean, they will. If I'm not mistaken, they eventually get it. They just don't get it first.
Yeah, I think this. I think it's a great deal because they were not getting funded to do episodes of Sesame Street, and HBO said, "What if we gave you money to do episodes of Sesame Street like you want, and we'll run them on HBO first, and then they'll run on PBS later?" So in the end, what HBO's, you know, in exchange for HBO getting an exclusive window, they get to make new episodes of Sesame Street, which, you know, is that ideal? Well, no, but they were in a position where they were going to have a very limited number of episodes that they could make, and now they can make more, and they will ultimately be on PBS. So, yeah, it would be better if they could just do them straight to PBS, but they weren't getting the funding. So, you know, I feel like this is really cool in that they're getting their money. And from HBO's perspective, I think that's really interesting. Like, is this a play for HBO that are we going to see? I think they might have even said that they're going to do like an HBO Kids app. But the idea that, you know, with your HBO subscription comes a lot of different things, including this kids programming. And that's kind of smart for HBO, too.
And HBO has a history of kids programming. They've done a lot of children's programming. So they're in it, and they've done some great kids shows. So yeah, I know the initial outrage was like, oh my God, it's, you know, now it's a pay service. But it's not. I mean, and honestly, I know that people were like, well, why do the rich kids get to see it first? And all that. And some of that is a little bit too PC for me. I always think like, okay, you do know what the target audience for Sesame Street is, right? And those kids do not care when they see it. Right. Just that they see it. You could take, they are not saying, hey, this is not the current episode of Sesame Street.
Did you see what Big Bird said yesterday? Spoilers! Spoilers!
Spoilers! Right. It's like, and they're not going to come and say, oh my God, my friends in kindergarten who get HBO totally ruined it. Like the Snuffleupagus episode where he comes in.
That was a big reveal. That was a big reveal when they revealed that Snuffleupagus was an imaginary character and not real, and only Big Bird could see him.
Yeah.
Huge twist. I remember that all the Sesame Street people were interviewed on all the TV websites the next day explaining how they did that. It was a callback. A little callback.
Callback. So these guys are not going to say, oh, yeah, you kind of ruined it because – you know, I saw the bears and all the stuff that happened. The kids talked about it at lunch today over our milk and cookies, and I don't get it for another 3 days, damn it. Look, they don't care.
Yeah, they don't care.
Kids that age
don't
care.
Know.
They'll say, you know what? Oh, we don't have it? Okay, show me last week's episode. Again.
I assume that when we were watching Sesame Street when we were kids, that it was like the same 15 episodes over and over again that were, I don't know, maybe not, but always seemed that way to me, like, because it didn't matter, you had no perception of it. But
I definitely thought that part of the argument when I was reading these things online and people were outraged that they weren't going to get it, the poor kids weren't going to get it first. I'm like, well, it's kind of a knee-jerk reaction there, but I know you don't have kids, clearly. So, I mean, if you did, you would know they'll watch anything at any time.
I get the idea, going back to Megan's letter, like you said, about things that are not accessible for the people who should be getting them. But, you know, I would say this is not about the Children's Television Workshop and HBO. This is about, you know, why are we not funding? Why did Sesame Street have to make a deal with HBO in order to do new episodes? That would be my question, because basically HBO is kind of swooping in and saying, in exchange for some marketing clout, basically, we're going to fund a full season of Sesame Street. And nobody else was standing up to do it. So I'm glad they did it. And if that's a problem, then you might want to consult with whoever, you know, perhaps your elected representative about why PBS isn't being funded like it should be.
Yeah, exactly. Totally agree.
Okay, let's move on to another excellent letter. Good, a lot of good letters this time.
Letters.
Okay, this is from Scott in the 913. Says, Jason and Tim, I enjoyed HBO's Show Me a Hero, but was surprised there's so little buzz about it. The true story of a public housing debate in Yonkers is a tougher sell than Game of Thrones, but even the way they presented it by doubling up episodes so it ran 3 nights instead of 6 seemed like they were just burning it off as quickly as possible. Any thoughts on why HBO would work with David Simon to make a great piece of television and put so little effort into promoting it? Did they just decide its story was too difficult to market in these times of confusion? Scott in the 913.
Well, I looked it up. So Scott is in the he is near in Kansas, Kansas City metropolitan area, right?
Very good.
Which shares a 785-6203. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'm just looking at the map, but 913,
Kansas City.
In the KC.
In the KC.
That's a tough one.
Is this to keep a good relationship for David Simon for his next project? Is that why would they do it just for that?
They could. Yeah.
And prestige. I mean,
That's there. It's definitely prestige. You know what? This thing's going to mop up at the Emmys, and this is part of what HBO does. That's part of their business model. I mean, that's how the model works. So,
well, in these times of confusion, when you could watch, when even without paying for cable, right, or paying for a premium cable, you can watch lots of great material. How else does HBO differentiate themselves? They have to say, we've got stuff that you want to see that's better than what you can get. Because otherwise, I mean, it's not like people are like, man, I don't have enough TV to watch. I better get HBO. They got to like have a reason to get HBO, and pointing at all the Emmys, pointing at all the creators. That's how they sell their product.
Definitely. And I think that there could be, because like I went into it thinking, oh my God, this is a total eat your vegetables show. And there are certainly elements to it. But it is fascinating. I think what may if that was part of their thinking, then I'm sure they were surprised when there were so many positive reviews, and those reviews said, look, it's a little bit wonky, but it's actually really super entertaining, way more than you think it would be. Especially when it's based on something, you know, essentially it's a mini series about city council meetings, which is like, shoot yourself. I mean, that's just really going to be boring. But you know what? It's David Simon. He made it interesting. And the part that kind of tripped me up a little bit, Jason, was the they didn't promote it idea. If you look at what HBO has and how they actually do promotion and advertising, it's not a lot. And I would argue that there's a ton of miniseries and movies and especially documentaries on HBO that would definitely raise their hand and say, oh, I think they did a lot for Show Me a Hero when they didn't do it for ours. So there's a lot of content that just doesn't get a whole lot of mention on HBO, and you find it later. So I don't know if that was it, but the good news is we're talking about it, and look, so was everybody else. And go find that.
Show
go
Me a Hero.
6 hours. You can't beat that.
Yeah. Right. Jenny writes in from
the block.
From the almost area code of record, the 650.
Oh, 650. Yeah, she's close to the block.
She's close to it.
She's down the block.
Jenny says, long-time listener, first-time questioner.
My favorite. Thank you. That's also never not funny.
Yep. I listen to your doom and gloom about the coming TV implosion, and I don't get it. Mm-hmm. I was wondering if you could explain more. Let's suppose that you're right, that there's too much TV on for people to make money and the industry will implode. So what? Suppose we revert back to the economics of, say, 5 years ago. That means we're reduced to watching crap like Dexter, Community, Breaking Bad, Lost, House, Damages, How I Met Your Mother, Men of a Certain Age, The Daily Show, The Colbert Report, Mad Men, The Good Wife, Archer, Modern Family, etc. Plus, awful fresh new shows like The Walking Dead, Justified, Louis, Sherlock, and Boardwalk Empire. Even if you go back 10 years, there are some of those same shows. Plus, for example, Battlestar Galactica, The Office, Deadwood, Rome, The Shield, The Wire, The Sopranos, 6 Feet Under, The West Wing, Chappelle's Show, and some new returning show called Doctor Who. Yeah, 10 years. Good knowledge. My point is, it's been a long time now that there's been way more good stuff on TV than anyone who's not being paid can watch. I doubt we end up going back to a handful of networks. So how much are we really going to notice if we just go back to only having way too much good stuff to watch instead of way, way too much good stuff?
Well, yeah, that argument is not foreign. That's, I've talked about that and, you know, at least addressed that before. But I struggle with that question because I'm always in the discovery game. Like I'm always thinking, well, what if we didn't get The Wire? You know, like we didn't get The Wire when we had broadcast television. So we had to have something else come along and we had to be more of everything to get better and better and better. And then finally we said, oh, we're going to make this show. So it's not like, I just think like, why would you not want new pieces of art? And the argument that I will buy into is, you know, that we talked about last week as well, is that, you know, there are too many books and there are too many songs and there are too many bands, but that doesn't stop people from actually making it and getting it out there somewhere and seeing it. So having too much is not like an issue, and just because people can't get to it doesn't mean it's a tragedy. But and I pointed out that the difference was these models will go away, and I want to see The Man in the High Castle. I want to see Transparent and some of these other things that I might not get somewhere else. I just think it's Discovery's great. You know, it's like I want to be able to like have somebody say, oh, here we are making too much television, but this one newbie came in who wouldn't have existed otherwise and might not exist if you don't watch it. And they've made this amazing comedy or this amazing drama. I want to have this discovery. I want more to have this discovery, but I just think in terms of like my worrisome part of the industry implosion is always there. But yeah, sure. I mean, her argument is legit. Like, we'll still have good stuff. It's not like we're going to lose It's not like we can't have good things.
Right. It's not going to become a wasteland where, no more TV is produced.
No.
But there's going to be less. Anytime if you're making 400 shows as opposed to 200 shows, in that extra 200, you're going to get stuff that is, you know, there's more interesting stuff, that not just by the numbers, but by the fact that it's a more, you know, diverse group trying to reach a different set of audiences. I don't know.
Right.
Not going to be a desert, though. No matter what happens.
No, it won't be a desert. We'll still be fine.
Thank you, Jenny.
Mm-hmm.
From the 650. Okay, one more. It's Scott in the 615.
Ooh.
Do you want to look that one up? That's Tennessee again. Nashville.
Oh, you did it already?
I did
you
it.
Looked it up?
Nashville, Tennessee.
Okay. Nashville. We got like that.
Yep. Recently heard about the new show Power on Stars from an interview with the showrunner. What's your impression of the show? Did it have a TCA panel? Have you watched it? And is it worth our time? Scott in the 615.
Well, oh, I'm sorry.
Wake up, Tim.
About Power?
Yeah.
See, this, okay, this is, this is bad. That was mean. But you know what? Yeah, I don't like Power. I think it's dumb. I think it's obvious. I think it's, I think it was Starz trying to play in HBO's game and saying, yeah, we're cutting, because they're a pay service. I always joke when I tell people, well, there's like the premium channels, which are HBO and Showtime and Starz. And people are like, what? Starz? What? And, you know, and Starz' problem was that a lot of people who actually got Starz were not watching they were paying for the movies, but not for the original content. And they're getting past that now, and they are making really good shows left and right over there. And my early criticism of them was a show like Power was it was my feeling for the existence of premium channels, something that's going to get another $17 out of me or something, is like, okay, you make something that I can't watch anywhere else. I mean, the quality has to be so high and so good, and maybe the storytelling is dense and it's a mature thing, and you're going to have a very, very small audience, so that that chases away the networks, and then the sex and violence or whatever you might choose, because you're making a mature drama, that chases away them as well, and possibly chases away, you know, FX and those. But my feeling is, if you're going to put something on a pay cable channel, premium channel, it better be damned good. And Power to me is like a network show and not a very good network show, network drama, with a lot of pointlessly unnecessary swearing and shooting and sex. Not that that ever bothers me. It doesn't. I'm not being moralistic here. It's just kind of a dumb show. And it's like, okay, that's basically a bad NBC show with tits.
Yeah, and we've talked about the that sometimes when you look at a pay cable show, you have that moment of like, are they doing this just because they're on pay cable and they feel it's obligatory?
Yeah.
And good shows, it doesn't feel obligatory. It feels like it's part of the, you know, if we told the story on the network, it would seem fake on NBC. It would seem fake because we would have to take out all this stuff,
right,
as opposed to, oh, we got to put in some boobs and we got to put in some swearing and some violence because we're on pay cable. And that, for me, that's the difference. It's like, does it feel like they're just doing it because they need to check the box, like we do on this every week?
Well, I would also just argue that a bad NBC show with tits is not a bad title for this podcast.
I don't,
should be in consideration.
All right, I'll put it on the list. I'm not putting it on the list.
No, I know you're not.
That's our secret title. That's the bonus title, bonus content title,
bonus materials.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's good. Yeah, there's some interesting stuff on Starz. You don't even notice it. That Patrick Stewart show, the Blunt Talk, is on there. Ash versus the Evil Dead, which we talked about, is coming. Mm-hmm. Outlander, which I watch and like. There's a lot of stuff on it. Black Sails. Yeah, there's lots of stuff.
They have a lot of good stuff. And Outlander, yeah. I mean, and the thing that I'm not a big fan of Blunt Talk, but the rest of them I'm looking forward to. And Ash versus the Evil Dead for sure.
Yeah.
So I don't know. There's a lot of good stuff there.
Just not Power for you.
Not Power.
Sorry, yeah. Scott.
Move beyond that.
All right.
No, I think Scott was actually just looking for advice. So we just gave him advice. We weren't scolding.
Don't watch it. It was your advice.
Scolding. I was just saying, don't watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good to know. Glad you enjoyed the interview with the showrunner. But don't watch the show, says Tim.
Don't watch it.
All right. Anything else before we go? That's the end of the listener letters.
No, we nailed it.
All right. Tight and bright. An hour. In and out.
Number
49 in the books. Next week, David J. Lohr will be here to take my place because I will be traveling, and we'll get number 50 done and dusted. Don't want to fall
behind.
Unless
David says no.
Oh my God. Well, then I'll call you from Portland and we'll do it that way. Wouldn't that be
interesting? He's like, you know what?
Nah. I decline.
Nah, I decline. You guys kind of lost me last week. What if he says, you know what? I'm a huge Power fan, so no, I'm not doing...
You know, I have not ever experienced David turning down an opportunity to be on a podcast, so it seems he'll probably be here.
He'll be ready.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh my God, he'll be ready. That dude prepares.
He does. He does. Okay. Puts me to shame, that's for sure. Well, okay, before we go, we'll tell everybody how to reach us. If you want to talk with us on Twitter, Bastard Machine for Tim, Jay Snell for me. If you want to post comments about the podcast on Facebook, you can do that, facebook.com/TV Talk Machine. You can send us emails at podcast@TVTalkMachine.com. And if you want to send a tweet to be used as a question or comment, send those to @TVTM, because that is what we check when I'm compiling the list of questions for the week. So lots of ways to get your questions in and send us feedback. And that's it, Tim. It's been a pleasure as always.
It always is. And you have a good time in Portland.
Thank you.
David and I will go into the 50th.
And I will speak to you on the other side in a fortnight.
Okay.